This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the 11th season of the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of January 18th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Friday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? Happy New Year. Long time.
Indeed it is. Happy New Year to you, and 11. Wow. Damn.
Yeah, I thought I would just throw that at you right at the beginning and see how you would react. Damn from Jim Allen.
That means we're 10 years old. Completely did the 10.
Oh no, see, you, I have a plan. I'm not aging with the rest of you people.
Oh, well, I wasn't implying that you were. I didn't want to seem so pedestrian or make you sound so common.
There you go. Excellent. Well, yeah, don't do that. No, I'm thinking I'm going to take 2 year increments to age 1 year. Maybe.
That sounds like a good plan.
I'm still working on it. Anyway, my off-season workout program is going well. I'm at my summer belt loop.
Nice.
Here in the dead of winter. So that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, I have a new eating program, not a diet, but an eating program, and it's really working. So I try to stick with that. I'm excited to see how much weight I can lose, you know, when I really start trying to lose weight. So,
wow, well, good for you.
Exciting stuff.
I wish I could say that, but, if I really wished I could say that, I would probably do it and say it.
Well, you're thin enough, buddy. You're thin enough.
Yeah. Ah, you are a sweet man. Okay.
All right, people. Vaccines are on the way even here in Japan, but I think we have to still remain diligent and be safe. So please do so. And thank you to all the frontline workers, and hang in there, folks. The vaccines are on the way to really protect you guys. So thank you very much for all you guys do.
Indeed.
All right. On our first show of the year, we've got Jim's chat with Lotte reliever Frank Herman. We're going to discuss Tomoyuki Sugano, the Hall of Fame, and more. And we'll finish with some high heat, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, Frank Herman of the Lotte Marines caught up with him right after New Year's. And a little tough time in it. He's got to get the kids to sleep, and he's got a little short window between the time, John can relate to this, between the time he gets the kids to sleep and then goes to sleep himself so he can get up at 5 in the morning and do his workouts.
Yeah, that's me.
That ain't that's me, baby. Life. Yeah, that ain't me. That's right. I got Bob Dylan going on here. Okay.
Well, I can tell you as someone who does it on a daily basis, it's much harder to get the kids to sleep, the twins to sleep, than it is to do the workout.
Wow.
The workout's fun.
Okay. Well, we are going to talk. Well, we talked about a bunch of interesting things, and Frank is just a bundle of energy, and he's so much fun and so insightful. So I'm just going to let you roll and listen to us and listen to me. Also, try to get over the fact that he's not still pitching for the Rakuten Eagles, because I didn't see him last year except on television.
Right.
So I still, when I think of Frank Herman, it's hard to think of anything except wearing the crimson. So, okay, well, let's take it away.
All right. Our first podcast guest of the year is Frank Herman of the Lotte Marines. It's still hard not to say Rakuten Eagles, but thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Okay. Now, let's get a quick rundown on, first of all, your situation, because what's the team telling you about reporting to camp?
That's a good question. Not a whole lot. I don't think they know a whole lot. I don't think anybody knows a whole lot. You know, I think the situation is pretty fluid. I talked to some guys. You know, Wheeler is with the Giants. He said he's leaving the 18th. I think Busenitz was leaving the 19th.
Okay.
For the Eagles.
Right.
I think my visa, I didn't give up my visa when I left. It's good for a year until January 27th. So I'll probably come back before then.
Okay.
You know, if things hold, you know, I know they recently declared a state of emergency there. So I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. Last year, you know, my family wasn't able to get in. We right. kind of were waiting to see what happened, and then it got to mid-April, and as nobody was allowed in the country. So,
right.
Obviously, hoping a situation like that doesn't happen, but if it does, we're probably not playing baseball anyway, so we probably have bigger issues going on. I doubt they're congregating in Ishigaki if, you know, we're in a state of emergency, so
yeah.
hopefully things clear up soon.
Now, tell me, I was shut out of the media access last year. I mean, I could have gone to the teams and given them my blood samples and filled out forms in triplicate to stand and not talk to people. But it was hard, except for a few teams, mostly Pacific League teams. Now, how was your contact with reporters last year?
There was none.
Really?
None. I didn't have one single interview last year.
Wow.
You know, I think from what I saw, the team's social media arms
right.
I think tried to pick up, obviously with their own spin on it, but they tried to pick up some slack of maybe players not being in the media as much.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I saw. I think they did their best with that. Mm-hmm. Just key players, you know, in front of the fans and stuff like that.
Okay.
It was a hard year for everybody.
Yeah.
Fans too. Like it's sad because I know how much these Japanese fans love baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Like they love going to the games and having that release and cheering and having a few beers and just, you know, there's nothing better than on a nice day. And I know, I'm sure it was hard for them. It was hard for us not to play in front of them, to see people, you know, lined up outside the stadium, like, longingly watching us walk in.
Right.
And even when fans came in and they weren't allowed to cheer
right.
with their voices, it was like, yeah, it was hard. It was hard for everybody.
I had a brief conversation with Alcides Escobar before the start of the season, and he had played here with the Major League All-Stars. And I said, so you're looking forward to the crowds? He says, oh, yeah, you know, this is going to be fun. And it was weird.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, it's definitely one of the features of coming over here. You know, it's one of the best parts of it. And especially that random Thursday night game and the Kyocera Dome or something like that,
uh-huh.
where you kind of drag it and you could use some fans and some music and stuff like that. Yeah, that was definitely missed.
Yeah, and of course, one of the things that people who move to play for the Marines tell me is the fan experience is a little. I don't want to say it's good. It's better. It's unique.
I would say it's better. It's good.
Okay.
I mean, and I
go ahead. Go for it.
I absolutely did. But I told the team one of the reasons why I came over there was how loud the fans were and just like the energy, you know, the jumping up and down and stuff. That's awesome. Like, that's an experience. That's if I'm bringing a family member or a friend to mm-hmm. a baseball game in Japan, that's one of the places, you know, we're going to probably go to Koshin, but like, that's one of the sneaky places you have to go for the experience, because you're going to see some stuff there you won't see in other places.
Yeah, it's certainly a sneaky is a great expression, because people talk about, you know, Koshien rolls off the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
It's Japan.
It's easy, yeah.
But Chiba, it's, you know, in the ballpark doesn't necessarily lend itself to that, but mm-hmm. damn, it's an experience.
Yeah, the ballpark's unique though too. Like, this is one thing you could argue like
okay.
or not, but like 17 mile an hour or whatever winds and rain whipping you in the face. Like, I had a couple outings this year where I came in from the bullpen. Like, how am I going to throw the ball over the plate? Like, I'm driving in the car because
uh-huh.
it's windy, it's rainy. It's like, oh man, you know, like, we could have scored a couple more runs. I couldn't have stayed out of this one, but you get it done because the hitters have to deal with it too.
Yeah.
But, you know, then it's almost like you're the Green Bay Packers, and that become a little bit of a competitive advantage for you after a few outings where you're kind of like, all right, like, I got this and that. Like, for me, when it's like that, and I throw my curveball, I throw uh-huh. a bigger curveball, it's tough because it's going to break violently, but if the guy's not swinging, I have no chance. So
right.
I had a rough outing early in the year against Cebu, and my worst outing of the year probably statistically, and I learned from that outing And it's helped me later in the year when we were going down the stretch, because there was another outing like that. I think it was against the Fighters.
Okay.
And I stayed fastball cutter happy, and I used my fastball a lot. And I said, you know, these guys, even if they hit it, the wind's going to knock it down.
Uh-huh.
So you learn to play to that home field advantage a little bit.
Exactly. Well, that was the next thing I was going to get to, because I've had Marines players tell me you learn the wind there. You learn where the tunnels and currents are, and specifically, was that the big adjustment? Is go hard pitch heavy when it was really windy, or did you have a softer delivery that you could take advantage of certain wind conditions?
I think it's more. You know, not to get too analytical, but you want to go with your higher spin pitches, the pitches that are going to cut through the wind a little more, like a changeup or a curveball, something, not necessarily a curveball, but something with a smaller break and a little bit, like my four seam is good in that elements, because it kind of, it has a little bit more ride to it, stays out. I feel like I got a few more pop-ups, you know?
Okay.
And you're also just trying to keep the ball in play, you know. You can get into a situation where you're like, it's windy, I'm going to throw some off speed here, and then all of a sudden you walk two guys, they're bunting, outfield's in, and you know, that's when the inning can get away from you. But it's almost like you want to say, okay, here it is, hit it, you know. Maybe you crush one into the wind and it's a can of corn.
If the wind isn't blowing it to, you know, the ball to right field, to left field.
It's usually a crosser coming in, though. That's one thing I've learned.
Exactly. That's what I meant. I mean, there's it's very deceiving when you first arrive, because you see the flags whipping, and it's hard to, I think until you actually have seen a lot of games, it's hard to judge how the wind blows in that stadium, because I've seen pitchers who had pitches. I remember Shinsuke Watanabe's curveball was a floater. And he would use that when the wind was really howling, because he could throw it essentially a knuckleball. It became essentially a knuckleball.
Yeah. I'm sure with the break, you could start it, you know, way up out of the zone where a guy's giving up on it and have a break at the zone. No, hopefully that's some of the next level stuff this year I can kind of get in those conditions.
Okay, maybe they'll be handing out Jedi pitch. Pitch awards at mid-season, a competition among the pitchers, maybe. Now, you had an injury during the season. And how was that? Because, again, you know, like being off before the start of the season and being isolated, coming back from an injury during a COVID-19 is a different experience. It must have been a different experience as well.
Oh, man, it was very challenging. You know, so it was a freak injury. My finger, I was drying off in the hotel. Finger got caught in the towel, like snagged in the towel, rolled around my index finger. And it got bent back, and it got bent forward to the point where my extensor tendon, like, kind of tore, I guess. And it's called mallet finger or baseball finger. Usually it happens like infielders when the ball hits them on the front, like the nail side of the finger.
Okay.
Bends their finger back.
Oh, yeah, ruptures. Yeah. I know that one.
Yeah. So so you lose feeling in the finger and you can't extend the finger. And it's just very swollen and sore. So, yeah, it takes time to get the swelling out of the joint, get your mobility back, and then start getting the feel for it. Because, you know, pitching is such a fine-tuned thing that it's hard when you don't have your index finger. It was particularly difficult for me. Like, even in the playoffs, you know, I don't think this was ever a known thing, but down the stretch, I want to say I had like 6 or 7 outings to end the regular season. Then I threw a couple times in the playoffs.
Right.
But I wasn't able to grip my curveball. I throw, like, a spike curveball.
Okay.
My best off-speed offering.
Right.
And I wasn't able to put my finger at that 90-degree angle that it requires to throw that pitch. So I had to learn a new breaking ball kind of on the fly. Like you said, during a pandemic, hadn't seen my family in 8 months. Well, you know, I probably could have opted to go home. But, you know, it was a special season for us. I really felt like that. Like, that team dealt with a lot. You know, I know everybody dealt with a lot last year, but we were one of the few teams to get hit with a wave of COVID. I think we lost like 12 guys coming down the stretch. You know, we're fighting off Sabu and the Eagles who played great last year. You know, so it would have been a waste. I felt like it would have been a waste personally and from a team level, if we weren't, I know we lost to SoftBank and they're probably a better team at the end of the year, but it would have been a waste not to make the playoffs. And I was really proud of how the team responded to adversity all year.
Right. And I know, and at the end, and you lost, how come?
Martin.
Thank you. I'm having an old guy brain freeze.
Yeah. You carried us. You know, we lost Brandon Laird early in the year, who was the star for the team the previous year.
He
was hurt and, you know, wasn't himself even before that, kind of because of the injury, I think. And then, you know, losing Martin, and just, we had about Taniguchi, for my money, is our best pitcher.
Sure.
I think he's great. Lost him to Tommy John. We lost some bullpen guys. You know, the Jay Jackson incident was unfortunate. Sure. It was just a tough year. I know every team deals with their stuff. It was a tough year. But we played great. We were tied with SoftBank, and then we had the COVID outbreak that can happen to anybody, you know, any team,
right?
Because we've seen the NFL. So it was great. And then I had the injury, and luckily we had some bullpen death with Salamore coming over.
Sure.
So, you know, you have to say that the GM did a really good job kind of weathering the storm, getting us the pieces we needed to stay afloat. And, you know, it turned into a good season, even though we didn't win the Pacific League. I think we made a good showing. We have a lot of young players. Hopefully Suzuki can kind of be a factor for us next year.
You know, okay.
If we can get that guy pitching to 80% of his capability as a you know, essentially a first year player,
right?
We could really be interesting next year.
Yeah, they've talked about using him on the first team, and he hasn't even started in the minors yet. I don't know if he played in any instructional league setups in the fall or not, but yeah, that's a big question. Now I want to actually touch on Sawamura, because seeing him with the Marines, he brought that big smile that he used to have when he was a fresh out of college. We hadn't seen for a while. He looked really joyful. Was that the impression you got from him?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've all been in places where things can kind of get stale, you know, in our life, different places or jobs or whatever. And I think getting a fresh start, and, you know, it was 2 months, you know, so it's kind of a sprint, and you feel a little bit lighter and freer, and you can say, hey, I can just go out there and pitch a little bit. And, you know, Yoshi is a tremendous pitching coach. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough good things about Yoshi, our pitching coach, and our bullpen coach, Kyle Goye, but, you know, just from a communication standpoint, taking care of guys.
Mm.
I didn't throw three times in a row once last year.
Wow.
I would have it towards the end of the year if the situation arose or the playoffs. We had one guy throw three times in a row all year, and that was our closer one time. Those kinds of things for relievers, to know someone cares about you, to put you in situations to succeed,
right?
That's really important. That's really important from a mental and a physical standpoint, and I think it paid off for our team. And there were games last year that we probably could have won had we went with some of our back-end guys, but we got guys like Ono, some experience. We got other guys, and then those guys took that experience, and they got better. So, as far as Salamore, you know, obviously I can't get inside his head, but I think for him it was a fresh start, and it showed. You know, he was excited to get back out there, and obviously you see the stuff. You know, when he's on throwing strikes,
right?
The hitters really don't have much of a chance when that forkball's on. He's throwing strikes. You know,
well, the condition for him is being able to command his pitches.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Him and 95% of the other pitchers.
Yeah, but he has the stuff where if he does, it doesn't matter what you're doing
pretty much.
So, I mean, I hope he comes back. I don't know if that situation's been resolved yet, but I hope he comes back because, again, that would allow us to have that depth to kind of ease off guys and step on the gas sometimes. And limit, you know, if we have a 5-inning lead after 5 innings, we can go 6, 7, 8, 9. You know, Karakawa had a great season. Masuda, we have Ono's, like I said, Ono, I think a lot of, and then Salvador Warren myself. So,
right. Ishikawa is coming back as well. He had Ishikawa Ayuma, the starter. He was had agreed to post him if he wanted to go, and he said no, not this year. And you mentioned when we spoke a year, 9 months ago or so, or whenever. It seems like I want to say it's the spring, but I think now it was the summer. It was just before the season started. And you talked about the young guys on the team. And damn, you hit it right on the head. Because here we are looking at the young guys, and about every 3 or 4 weeks, there's a new Marines young guy. You know, at first we saw Sato had a really nice debut, the rookie, and then Isanori Yasuda comes in and he does that great job, and and just going to be a really
Wada had
Koshiro Wada.
He sparked us and gave us some much needed innings. You know, Taniguchi, like I said, I think took the next step for sure. As a development, Fujiwara at the end of the year came on strong. We had guys in the bullpen like Ono. You know, a lot of guys even had kind of under the radar good seasons, like Ojima. That guy was a consistent third starter for us all year. He made every start. You know, it was like he would have a rough first inning, but he would settle down and make adjustments. And he's smart. And he asked the right questions. Like, they're doing something right there. I haven't been there long enough to say whether it's scouting, player development, a mix of everything. Right. But I've been impressed with their young players, and that's without getting the phenom, Sasaki, any innings, you know. So yeah. I think the future is definitely looking bright for them.
I was sort of on a bump about them last year because the Marines sputtered a lot. You know, they had a good record, but without a lot of the underlying numbers we expect from teams with good records, you know. So, but looking at the whole picture as you're going, you know, over the names, I have to think that it was a team that was sort of out of tune and not playing up to speed. It was winning, but it wasn't playing up to speed in terms of guys knowing their roles and being healthy.
Last year?
Yeah.
I think yes and no. I think if you look at our plus-minus differential, we had one of the worst in the league.
Right.
But we won a lot of close games.
Sure.
You know, we obviously had, like I mentioned before, we had a very good bullpen last year. We held leads when we had to.
Yep.
But we also had a little bit of a flair for the dramatic. We had a lot of come-from-behind late wins. Martin got some very clutch hits. We had a series early in the year where we swept, when we were playing six games, we swept Oryx 6 games in a row. And we very easily could have lost 4 of those games. But we just, you know, we took care of Oryx, kind of made some Oryx-like mistakes, not to, you know.
Okay, not to denigrate them any further than John will.
Early in the year, they did, you know.
Yeah.
That's another team, though, I will say, with some good young talent, that if they can get over the hump and get, I know they brought Romero back. That was a nice signing. But they have some very good young pitching, and they have some good young players that they always – every year, kind of at the end of the year, they bring up a couple guys. I'm like, who's this guy? You know, and then like Nakagawa last year.
Right.
You know, they have some young players, too, that are going to be good. So yeah.
I think
the Pacific League's wide open. You know, obviously, I say that with SoftBank looming there every year, but
right.
One of these years it'll happen.
It has, and of course the Lions showed that one before they started shedding pitchers. But what I meant to say about the Marines was, although, you know, as I said, the underlying numbers weren't the numbers you'd like, I think having looked at the players and what they can do, I think they were underperforming in terms of the runs scored and allowed.
Sure. Yeah.
And that the winning record is ironically more indicative of the true quality was my assessment of that team. So it's going to be fun.
I think we also had a lot of young – so they would let a lot of young players – you know, we had some guys in the bullpen. So if we were down 4 runs, sometimes the games would get a little out of hand, you know. We would go to some of our other bullpen pitchers. And then until we found the right mix, you know.
Right.
One, to have good players, young players, you have to let them play sometimes. And like I said earlier about Ono. And then that's when those young players can show you what they can do or not, and if they can take those experiences and learn to deal with failure and those kinds of things. So, you know, sometimes you take your lumps early in the year, and then you want to build to a crescendo at the end of the year. And, you know, we have a very steady manager also, I'll say that too. You know, he's a man of few words.
But okay.
He
but he speaks them very quickly when he does.
Yeah, no, I mean he's steady, man. Like he's the same guy every day, win or lose. And that's when you're coming to the ballpark, you have to lose him four in a row, and everybody's looking at the manager to see if he's nervous. Like No, I mean he's got that steady face. Like that, those little edges can help you too when it's the eighth inning and the stadium's rocking and everything in the dugout is kind of calm and Yoshi's pulling the right strings. Like those wins add up, you know, when you can eat those out.
Sure. I mean, and, I guess there's some cliche to it, to, you know, staying on an even keel and don't get too high and don't get too low. But he's sort of the model of that.
Yeah.
I mean, although he's positive, he's always got to.
Are for good reason, though, right?
You know, yeah.
I mean, like things that are said over and over again, a lot of times have
correct.
A lot of truth behind them.
Oh, I think so. Obviously, life is hard enough without having to hit baseballs and pitch baseballs. So now, as we talked about the COVID-19 and your family, now being without your family was really, you still have to be hoping they're going to be able to join you this year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still hoping that we can get over there, when we need to. But yeah, my family already had their visas.
Okay.
By the time we got their visas, it was end of September. My son is 6 in first grade. My daughter is 5. School was just starting and, coronavirus. At that point, it was like, we have a month and a half left. Let's just get through it. So they ended up not coming over. They had come over. My kids had went to school in Sendai, to an international school for a couple of years, too. So they've been there. They've been there for a while. And,
okay.
I had no problem. I mean, it wasn't ideal, but I knew I was sacrificing for my family and trying to do the right things and keep that in the front of my mind.
Well, sure. I mean, you've been all over the place and done everything as a professional baseball player, and being in Japan is just another, it's another chapter of the same thing, I suppose.
Right.
Take care of the things that are important. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you a safe journey to Japan, and
thank you, and
thanks for your time, and a happy new year to you and your family.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. Yeah, same to you.
Okay.
You
okay. Have a good evening. Thanks for catching
up. All right, Jim. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Frank. And hopefully we're going to get to see you someplace live this year. Be careful how you travel. So, John, any comments?
I just loved the entire talk. I liked the talk about pitching in the wind at Chiba.
Mm.
The fact that he mentioned Noki Sasaki, the pitching coaches, no pitcher throwing for 3 consecutive days during the whole season. It was all wonderful. So thank you very much for doing the interview. I guess, the importance of fans for me, whenever I hear players talking about fans, I always imagine this, the boilerplate comments that we hear in the hero interviews that involve the players saying, "You guys are the best fans in the world. We couldn't have done it without the cheering crowd." Or, you hear these sayings, these, like I said, boilerplate kind of quotes, "The voices of the fans help the ball go out of the park." Those comments, the ones I'm talking about.
Yeah. "Help me get hit by that pitch to drive in the winning run." Yeah.
Right. And now, we went through most of a season during which, very limited number of fans near the end, but mostly no fans, no large crowds, none of that ambiance, none of that electricity in the ballpark, the pregame drumming up, the fans, especially in Chiba, where they go crazy and they sing, they chant for the players, they have songs for each of the players, and these long efforts to cheer on the fans and make those guys, stump that you have to block out, but that helps create the atmosphere for the games. And to hear Frank talk about the fact that it wasn't there, and that, it's like the girl or the guy you've been dating for a while, and then you break up and you date someone else, and it's like, I didn't know how good I had it, but you took it for granted and it's gone. And that's the way I felt when I heard him talking about that, because, everything was good. And like I said, him talking about throwing in the wind there, I think is what, and you brought up one of my favorite pitchers from the good old days, Shunsuke Watanabe. But those things were good. But, we all miss part of life, you know, with this pandemic that we're in. And it just really hit me. I don't know why. Maybe, you know, we didn't get to go to parks. We didn't get to, you know, he didn't have an interview all year.
Yep.
That is, I mean, even with the COVID and the situation with the PR departments limiting interviews in the first place, the fact that he didn't have an interview the entire season, that just really adds to the perspective of what went on. Yeah. So, you know, I think we just see how important the whole baseball world is. You always see that phrase in Japanese newspapers or reports, the baseball world, it says. And I think it's, you know, for our purposes, for what we do, going to the parks and talking to players and seeing the fans, it all works together. Mm. And we just missed the whole thing last year. It was like it was there, but it wasn't there. It was so we were so separated, and you know, we were so far from it, and the Hawks were so dominating and wrapped up everything so quickly that it was like, what happened? Was that really the season? You know, it's kind of short. You know, it just was unfulfilling. It was unfulfilling. And I think, you know, you hear Frank talk about the fact that the team did well. There's a lot of young players coming up who did well and performed even when they had that COVID outbreak and lost a bunch of players. They had a bunch shipped down to the farm and some farm hands come up to the first team, and they, you know, some of them did well and helped them. But just the whole dynamic of the whole season, I think that really put it in perspective when you hear a player just talk about the fact that, you know, because those parts of the game, it impacts the game. I mean, all the players, sometimes they say these things and we don't know how sincere they are, how genuine they're being.
Mm.
But to me, when he said those things in this interview, it really, really, it just kind of hit home. So,
well, you know, we have these memories, and I'm just going to amplify, I guess, what you said a little bit. We have these memories of the first time we went to, you know, a baseball game, a major league baseball game or a minor league baseball game. And we went, wow. And then the first time we went to this, you know, just a remarkably different stadium. And the first time we went to a Japanese game, you know,
right.
And then there's all these different kind of levels of experience. And then there's, you know, the first time you go to Koshien, and there's the first time you go to a Marines game.
Mm.
And it's a different experience. And I still remember the opening of the 2000, I want to say it was the 2001 season at Seibu Dome between the Marines and the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been 2000, it could have been 2001, I don't remember. But it was one of the baseball editor or the sports editor from the Yomiuri Shimbun happened to be, I was working with Yomiuri then, was at the park, and he didn't get to the park a lot. You know, when you're at that point in your career, pretty much you're not going to the park.
Right.
And he probably hadn't been to a Marines game, because it was Johnny Kuroki was pitching for the Marines and against Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Mm-hmm.
On opening day, and the left field stands, the visitors still sat on the visitors' dugout was still on the third base side then, and the left field was filled with black shirted Marines fans, and they needed to rally, and they did rally to win the game, and they were, you know, they were jumping up and down as they were the only team that did that at the time, and seeing that wave of black shirted fans jumping up and down. I watched the senior sports writer at the Yomiuri Shimbun, just his jaw dropped.
Mm.
And you get that when you go to Chiba, and you know, you said it, and I think it's true. I think one of the things is that all the fans across Japan put a lot of work into their cheer songs for each player.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes for the special, you know, the routines that go with them sometimes.
Right.
You know,
the
gestures and so on. And but the Marines are one of the teams that had probably, I'm not an aficionado. I think most teams have something special for some of the players.
But yeah,
Marines had a lot of them. My favorite one, I had a few, but one of my favorite ones from the Marines was from, I'm sure you all remember Saburo Omura.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about him, but when he joined the Marines, there was another Omura on the team. And so the shortstop from Peel Gakuen said, "Call me Saburo." You know, this was sort of the Ichiro boom. And
right.
So, but the other Omura was Iwao Omura. And his cheer song was "Old MacDonald Had a Farm." Iwa, Iwa, oh.
That's funny.
You know, so they had a lot of those ones like that. And it wasn't unique to them, but the degree of the creativity is very high. The positivity is very high there. So it's all things considered. But, you know, Frank mentioned this when we talked about 10 months ago. And it was sort of a check because I wanted to sort of give him a chance to give, I didn't mean it that way, but to give him the chance to say what most players say. Oh, it's neither good or bad. You can't say one is better than the other.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
And he said, no. This is the best. So that was really cool. And the other one, of course, the wind too. Talking about the wind, I actually really wanted to get into talking about how the wind tunnels through the ballpark because it's not what it looks like. But we didn't quite get there. But maybe he'll work on a ninja pitch this season. And the other go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Remember, I talked to Tadahito Iguchi a long time ago when he played mm-hmm. there, when he went to finish his career there, and you know, he talked about the wind, but I don't think it's the same every day and every spot. You can get a swirl in one area. It just depends on, you know, which direction the wind is coming from.
Right.
And because, you know, you would say that the ball carried really well to left field. It was right field. But I'm like, you know, I've seen some balls pop up and go out of right field, too. And then you hear the pitchers talking about things. So I just think, you know, it's different and it's different daily. And it depends on where you are, you know, in the stadium at that time.
Yeah, and I haven't been in so long that it's almost like I can't visualize it anymore. But there was you very often see when you see the flags in center field blowing straight in towards home plate.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange because they come in over the center field fence and then they kind of, and I don't remember whether they hit the opposite roof of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a U-turn at ground level. So there's a current going out from home plate towards center.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on.
Level, right, and that was the one that Shinsuke Watanabe used to talk about, and Tomoya Satozaki, his catcher, used to talk about him throwing his curveball into that wind.
Mm-hmm.
Really make it jump. So there was that, and of course, you know, we wouldn't have been anywhere without the great towel injury.
Oh yeah, to hear him explain it, I didn't really get it.
Yeah,
but
he twisted it in the towel or something. But that's the second best injury I've heard reported by a pitcher I knew. The other one was Keiichi Yabu using these rubber strength tubes. And the handle broke, and he popped his eye with it.
Oh yes, I do remember that.
With the Oakland A's. So yeah, it was just really a lot of fun, and hopeful. I'm trying to be hopeful about the COVID situation, and the reason I asked Frank what the Marines were telling him is because the Marines at that time were the one team that was coming out and saying, "We need a plan, people. We need a plan." And I'm going And this was about 3 or 4 days after one of their team officials says, you know, we're going to have a plan because we're expecting a lockdown. We're expecting all this. But I guess they had a plan, but it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. I just had 2 points. So the other or last point was that when Frank talked about the young players and said, I think he was talking about the pitchers, and he said they're doing something right there. And he said that speaks volumes for the organization, but he's in the organization. So I thought, you know, that this is profound because he's working right alongside some of these young pitchers, and whether it was COVID related or not, he said he hasn't been there long enough. Now, obviously, when there's in the pandemic, he can't spend as much time watching the other pitchers, especially the young ones. And they worked out in groups a lot. So I would imagine he didn't see some of them until it was game time. And he saw them perform in the game, but didn't really work out alongside of them. So, their production or their effectiveness was just, he was a spectator just like the rest of us because he didn't really know what they could do probably. So I thought, he's in the organization and we observers, all of us like to jump to conclusions, but he worked a whole season with some of these guys and yet he's saying they're doing something right over there, which says to me that, he complimented Iguchi, he complimented Masato Yoshi, the pitching coach. And I think, he has obviously mentioned Sasaki and he's looking forward to the rookie. He was a rookie last year, but looking forward to the young pitcher. No, that's right. He'll be considered a rookie. So yeah.
Hasn't pitched in any game at any level.
Yeah. Coming up and performing. So, for him to say that about the organization, I thought that was a profound statement as well. And obviously, even though you're in the organization, you don't, one season is not enough to really see the inner workings of the organization or the club, I guess, what I took away from that. It probably COVID, impacted so that you don't get a clearer vision that you normally would, but still.
Yeah, that'll be my explanation for not understanding things. It's COVID-19.
#Hashtag
Boy, what you said was really wrong. Oh, no, that was the COVID talking.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, all right. I was about to say this to him when he was talking, but I didn't. And that was that it's not the first time I've heard people tell me about how easy it was to work out of the bullpen when Masato Yoshi was the pitching coach. Because of that, never throwing on 3 days is one of his things. The former New York Mets pitcher, Montreal, I guess he pitched for a few teams. So, that's one of his things. He's also a favorite of mine. And he's also he's a funny combination of complex, old school, new school, gruff and funny. He's just a wild card, and I mean that in the best way. He's not always predictable, but he certainly has principles, and he tries to stick to them. He's not that I don't know what's a good word for it. He doesn't do really crazy stuff.
That's a good word for it.
And he'll do stuff that's not really by the Japanese book, but he'll stick with it. He seems to have a plan. I mean, maybe his plans aren't always, like the rest of us, his plans aren't perfect. They're created with imperfect knowledge, like we all have. But I do remember he has stuck to his guns twice. He quit the Nippon Ham Fighters twice over arguments with Hideki Kuriyama.
The manager there, yeah.
So, he's got his program and the things he wants to do, and sometimes, he's just not going to bend.
I don't blame him. Well, we certainly thank Frank for taking the time here in the off season to chat with us, and look forward to seeing him later in the season. Hopefully, he can get here for camp, and everything goes well, and we start the season on time, and lots of other dreams that people have of sports going on in the pandemic.
Indeed.
But it should be fun. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about Giants ace Tomoyuki Sugano, who recently wasn't able to work out a deal with a major league club after being posted, so he is returning to the Giants to torment the Central League and perhaps some of the Pacific League teams if we see interleague play. And just yesterday, he inked a contract with the Giants, a one-year salary, the reported richest in NPV history, 800 million yen for this season coming. And so you get an idea why he wasn't, why he wasn't able to come to an agreement with a major league team, because I don't think he was going to get that kind of money from major league teams. But then again, he did break the bank with the Giants. So, I mean, there was no guarantee he was going to get this kind of money from them either, but they really wanted him back.
Well, they had an off 4-year offer on the table. And I say that, I think we even reported that yesterday. So it's gone from being something reported to something that the Giants are talking about, or at least Sugano's agent is talking about.
Right. So,
and I think there were other issues. I don't think we know 100% of the story.
Sure.
About Sugano. You know, he mentioned certain things in passing without going into a great deal of detail. He did complain about having a deadline. He did complain about the fact that teams weren't willing to go out on a limb because the free agents, you know, the big free agents hadn't signed.
Correct.
Which
yes.
is like, yeah, welcome to the rest of the world.
Right.
So welcome to the new reality of MLB. And that had very little to do with the coronavirus, but the other part of the coronavirus was the comment that Yu Darvish made after Sugano didn't sign. He said, I wasn't planning to talk about Sugano, although they had spoke because both Sugano and Kenta Maeda and Yu Darvish are represented by Joel Wolf of Wasserman Group.
Mm-hmm.
And so the three of them, Sugano was in contact with both of them and heard, you know, their on and off the field, the situation. And Darvish said, I wasn't going to talk about Sugano, but, you know, right now, major league teams are just really cheap. They got money and they're pretending like they don't. Okay. Well, end of the story. So he said, yeah, that's the way the market is. And it ain't going to change because these guys are acting like they're all broke right now. And, you know, they're not going to be able to make their money up in 1 year. So mm-hmm. it's not going to be better next year when Sugano is planning to try again.
Right. Yeah. When he's another year older. Well, I was just curious because I wanted to get your take on what you thought about it, because I remember when Nobuhiro Matsuda of SoftBank didn't sign, he was interested. He wanted to go and challenge Major League Baseball players and play over there, but then the contracts didn't seem to be what he was expecting, and he never did make a deal, and he came back. You kind of picked on him and said, hey, man, either you want to play over there or you don't. So here's another situation where we have a star player who's going
yes.
over but can't work out the details with the money, and he comes back, and then now he's actually signed. I mean, I think Matsuda came back. I don't think he got the richest contract in the history of SoftBank, or even so.
He didn't so break the SoftBank now.
Yeah. So he can't break the SoftBank. So, yeah, what's your take on Sugano coming back and signing this huge contract?
Yeah, that's good. And in fact, I was pondering that about guys who go and come back and thinking about conditions. And, you know, it's the reason I'm pondering it is because I wrote a blog post about last week about the reasons why Japanese players might want to reconsider going to the majors. One's the market's terrible. There's a lot of civil unrest. The COVID situation is really bad. There's a lot of reasons to stay in Japan. And Satoru Komiyama, who pitched briefly for the Mets and longtime rotation anchor for the Lotte Marines, commented. He said, look, you want to play in the majors, you go to the majors. You know, the money shouldn't matter. And of course, that, you know, that depends on your status. If you've already been paid millions of dollars, it shouldn't matter much. But he said, basically, the agents are the ones who make the big deal about money. And I said, okay. But I said, yes. And I've always wondered about that. And I was, of course, thinking specifically about Yosuke Kikuchi, Takashi Toritani, and Nobuhiro Matsuda, who all basically went to America with a plan not to inconvenience their team in Japan.
Right.
You know, we're going to go, but we're going to close the door in such a way that it won't bother anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it'll anyway, stay open.
So I reached out to Yosuke Kikuchi's agent, Mike Seal, and he said, you know, because I thought Kikuchi would have been able to make any, you know, any team that wanted him. He could have made the team out of camp if he'd gotten a camp invite, but he was not going to go. That was a non-starter for him. So if he did have one of those camp offers, he wasn't going to accept it.
Right.
And he said, well, from his standpoint, and I agree with this, it has to do with a lot of things. It has to do with the guaranteed money, the contract structure, the team location, the family, the following season market, and also the contract back home. I know Matsuda's was difficult because a friend of a friend was representing was negotiating with the Hawks and telling the San Diego Padres that Matsuda wasn't interested.
Oh.
Which his agent, his MLB agent, was furious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good.
No, that's a problem. And there were lots of everything about that issue was really hard for his agent. And yeah, his agent was furious because if Matsuda's agent had been, well, they don't really discipline agents too much in MLB, but she isn't an MLB agent. So basically the Padres had no problem listening to what she said. She wasn't negotiating contracts. She was just giving him information. So all kinds of things are going on. Anyway, with Sugano, I wasn't surprised that he didn't go. I was half expecting it just because the timing was terrible.
I think all things considered, that's correct. I was hoping he would go.
I was hoping he would too.
Hoping he would go.
But, you know, Sugano's one of these guys, and I know. Deanna Rubin, you know, likes to remind me that, you know, players are not number generating machines, that they're human beings. And I think nobody really gives me that sense more than Sugano.
And why is that?
Well, because he carries himself with so much poise and so much good humor, and that you just expect him to make the right decision. He's one of these guys that just like you expect him to be able to adapt, and he's going to make the best choice for him. And he's not, he gives off this aura or sense that this is a guy he's not going to do what anybody else tells him to do. Unless it's his family telling him to go play for the Giants because his uncle's the manager. But, you know, leaving that aside, you know, but that was, you know, I'm sure that was part of the arithmetic that he went through. You know, is it worth the trouble? But he's a calculating in a positive way. Strikes me as being a really calculating guy. And so he was actually the one guy I've expected all these years who would go and say, no, you can do better. I'm going home. And even though he's a guy who for the last 15 years has dreamed of playing in the majors.
Yep. Yeah. I'm disappointed that he wasn't able to work out a deal.
Sure.
And, you know, it's going to keep the Giants pretty good in the Central League. I kind of counted him out and thought the Giants are going to have to rebuild their pitching staff, and that's not necessarily true. So changes a lot, but yeah, he'll be back. And
That's how it goes. I hope when these guys make decisions, I hope they all make good decisions.
Yeah, well, that's how it goes. Partly, you know, in the COVID era, that's how you got to play the ball. That's how you have to play the game.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the Hall of Fame. So the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, I think it's called officially, added two members on Thursday, Katsuji Kawashima who managed Japan during the 1996 Atlanta Olympics, among other things, and author Kazuo Sayama, both as part of the special committee. But, you know, in my opinion, I think I said it last year, I had a fairly long rant, right? So I'll shorten it this year.
It's not terribly long, but it was a good size. We don't have to throw it back.
No, I won't throw it back. I just won't add to it. If you want to hear it, you know, go back and listen to last year's show. But the Hall of Fame is really failing Japanese baseball. It is keeping out players whom everyone knows, like Tuppy Rhodes and Randy Bass, who are both part of Japanese baseball lore. And in Tuppy's case, he's an all-time great. And if that's the case for the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame, that it's going to celebrate lesser contributors. I'm not taking away anything from their contributions, but they certainly don't amount to the contributions of players whose names still every season are mentioned thousands of times by fans of every team in the league. Without a doubt. And if those guys and their memories can't be preserved in the Hall of Fame, then I can't process that and shift my brain to make this Hall of Fame something that I take seriously.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this whole debate, this is a strange debate that never really happened, I think. And I'm going to actually take a little credit for it, because I looked this year for articles in Japanese media about the Hall of Fame. And there were quite a few. Last year, there were a few, and oddly enough, and the reason I would take a little bit of credit for it is because I wrote a series of fairly scathing posts about Tuffy Rhodes' plight, about not getting, you know, he's certainly the best candidate the Hall had, not until this year, but from 2015 to 2020, he was the best candidate who wasn't getting voted, and wasn't making any progress towards getting into the Hall of Fame. I mean, you know, Hideki Matsui went in, and Tomoaki Kanemoto got in, and more power to him, and Kimiyasu Kudo, and so on, and Masaki Saito, yeah, those, you know, more power to him, no problem. But anyway, I had a big rant last year, and Craig Calcaterra, then he was with NBC Sports, said, like, you know, what's up with Japan? You know, it's great that Tuffy Rhodes went over there and had a great career, but don't they know what they had? And somebody somebody picked it up here, and that was like the one story, and I think there were hundreds of comments on it. I think I scanned through 100 or 200 of them. And today there was somebody saying, last year NBC Sports complained about Tuffy Rhodes and wondered what's wrong with Japan. And the comments, and I'll just read a couple of the comments from that I saw. And one of them is talking about Tuffy Rhodes. You know, he could be a little rough around the edges, but he wasn't just some guy who cranked out home runs. This is a guy who could play center field when he was young. He came over here. He could steal bases. He could do a lot of things. He has these records. You know, this is a guy we would love to see, a guy like this play again. He belongs in the Hall of Fame.
And he wasn't just here to make money and play baseball. He actually tried to assimilate. Remember, he came back and played in Indy League.
Sure.
Because he loved baseball.
Sure. And he would have stayed longer, which is probably what was necessary. But he had an issue of they needed him to sign when he was closing on a house in Phoenix, and he couldn't be in two places at once. So, another one, you know, it's another one went on. It's Rhodes was great. And why? What's wrong with us? And another one said, like, who are these morons? Why do they let these morons vote for these awards? It's absolutely disgusting. They shouldn't. These sports writers think they know enough to evaluate professional baseball players. Give me a break. Well, okay, I'm gonna take a slight amount of umbrage with that, but it's fair. And my rant on my blog was a little bit like, if you're going to vote, if you're going to cast, I don't have a problem if you really, really, really think Masahiro Kawai belongs in the Hall of Fame. But mm-hmm. if you do, please tell us why you think so. Don't just do it in silence. Don't just hit and run. You know,
it's like doorbell dash. Yeah,
that's criminal. So either tell us what you're doing and enlighten us, because on his little bio on the Hall of Fame handout that the voters get, it says, you know, he had, I think he won 5 Golden Gloves and he was a best 9. He was considered the best shortstop in the Central League once. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And, but his claim to fame is that he had more sacrifice bunts than anybody else in Japanese baseball history and more than anybody in Major League Baseball history. Well, damn it. Let's get him in the Hall of Fame.
That is noteworthy.
It is noteworthy.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not praiseworthy.
Well, it is. I mean, and he was it's hard to not say this. I come off sounding like a curmudgeon because I kind of am, but these guys are really good players. You know, there isn't a guy on the ballot who wouldn't really be a big help to, you know, it's not like any championship team would kick one of these guys off their roster.
Hmm.
But as you know, Bill James said, you know, you have to ask questions about guys in the Hall of Fame. Was he the best player at his position when he was active? Did anybody in Japan think he was the best player, the best shortstop in Japan or in the Central League? Well, you would have thought if they did that playing for a pennant winner, he would have won more than one, a frequent pennant winner. He would have won more than one best 9 award.
Yeah. You know, there's no criteria per se, you know, and even if there were some, nobody can really come up and match that on an annual basis or come up with something to measure guys with. But when you see all the production that Tuffy Rhodes had over the years and you don't put him in the Hall of Fame, it makes your Hall of Fame look bad. It doesn't make Tuffy Rhodes look bad.
It does, and you look where the votes go, and you see, and I don't have, you know, some guys cast votes because they don't want players who they think are worthy to fall off the ballot. That's the, you know, tactical voting.
Mm-hmm.
If I had thought that Norihiro Nakamura was going to drop off the ballot this year, I might have cast a ballot for him.
Right.
But... Or, you know, if that had been my plan, I would have voted for Hirokazu Hibata and Kenshin Kawakami and Norihiro Nakamura, not because I think they're the best, but because I think they're worthy of consideration. Now, on top of that, I think you have a lot of people voting for guys. Oh, one of the comments, and I'll leave it with this because I thought it was astute. One reason why Tuffy Rhodes is not in the Hall of Fame is because the Kintetsu Buffaloes no longer exist, and there aren't any Kintetsu Buffaloes beat writers voting on the Hall of Fame right now.
Hmm.
And that's just the way it is. And I think this is largely true, that the Hall of Fame voting is dominated. I don't want to say by, you know, Giants and Tigers reporters, but if you have a good relationship in your career with the Tigers and Giants reporters, you can do really well. And Tuffy did not have a good relationship with some of the Giants reporters.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't matter. All right. Well, that's astute. It is. But I do think that, and there's probably a younger crowd of reporters out there. So a new younger generation.
There are guys. I mean, I know they're there. I know they're there because they tell me. But
you got to know the history too. Yeah.
But we've got, we've got 330 some people voting in the players division. Now in the other, the leading vote, the person with the highest, who was named on the highest percentage of ballots for the second straight year in the players division, was Shingo Takatsu,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not, I'm not upset about. I didn't vote for him, but I'm not upset about it because he was, you know, he is one of the great relievers we've seen in Japan. I think in 10 years time, we'll probably think it's not a great choice, but it's not bad now.
Okay.
So Randy Bass was named on the most ballots in the experts division, which is a weird division because the experts division is voted on by baseball reporters for 30 plus years and a few other, and the most senior other reporters, it's a long story, and the living Hall of Fame members. And there's a little bit of a thing. Tatsuro Hirooka is the most vocal of the living Hall of Fame members, who basically writes every other day about who's not worthy of being, basically none of the guys on the ballot are worthy. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's no criteria all laid out, so certainly he can make the argument.
I think that's, you know, I think that's a good and a bad thing. You know, if there's a discussion about the merits and people actually take part in a dialogue, that there's no hard and fast rules and merits, I think that's actually not a bad thing. And to go back to Craig Calcaterra, he had a very astute point about the U.S., the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. He said, I don't even really want to deal with it because to me, the more important thing is not, you know, up and down vote on whether a player had the greatest of careers, but what did this guy do? Let's just talk about what the players did and who they were and how complicated they were as human beings and, you know, and what kind of baseball players they were and what they brought to the game and what they brought to everything else. And isn't that so much better? And I have to think that's true. So whenever I'm trying to sort of analyze what makes a Hall of Famer, I'm also very frightened about wanting to put players on a single line.
Yeah, I totally understand. You can't possibly. Like, remember, I've always said these players are all different. They all bring different skill sets. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they're different. So I understand that. So, yep. But look, if we don't climb out of this rabbit hole now, we'll never get out. So let's move along. We have a couple of notes. One is that Masami Kuwata, the former Giants, Yomiuri Giants ace, who really doesn't have actual coaching experience, is going to be the Giants are calling the chief pitching coach this season. It was announced this week. So the story I read said that the Giants had been interested in making him a coach in past seasons. I don't know if it's the word they used was coach, but if you think back to the time when they conked Yoshinobu Takahashi on the head and woke him up one day as we imagined it happened and said, hey, come in, you know, the Giants want you to be the manager. You have to think it was part of that, maybe around that time, that they wanted Kuwata maybe to become manager or coach or be on the staff in some respect. So I'm thinking back in 2016, sometime around then. But anyway, I've only talked to Kuwata one time as a reporter, and he left the biggest impression on me because we were at Nagoya Dome and I just had one question for him, and I stopped him as he was leaving with his suitcase, going out. You've been to Nagoya Dome, you know where the press entrance is, down underneath on that first floor where the taxis roll in and roll out. He was just in front of that big exit, and I stopped him, and I asked him a question. He was so polite, answered the question thoughtfully, and then took his suitcase and continued on out the door. And he just reminded me when I met Hideki Matsui, who was very similar, very cordial, very polite. But you know, he's a great competitor. And what he said in his press conference when Kuwata, you know, got the gig as the chief pitching coach, whatever that's going to be, he said, look, I want to be the ace of pitching coaches, essentially, is what he said. And I thought that was a great comment. And you understand what kind of coach the Giants are bringing along. So I thought that was a pretty good pickup, actually, for them, without hearing that part of the presser. But your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. I certainly agree with you. Kuwata is about the most gentle baseball player you can ever meet. It's like most professional baseball players at some level, they have that, you know, I know these guys like Scott Matheson, he's combative on the field, and then off the field, he's really he's opinionated. He's very gentle, and he's a gentleman, but he's got his opinions. He's got that hard edge. He's still got a little bit of that hard edge. It's like Kuwata, he may have a hard edge in there somewhere, but it's sure hard to find.
Yeah, he's just as nice as he is soft-spoken.
And well, soft-spoken is the word. He's got that very soft voice, and he used to sit next to me at the press box at Cebu Dome when I was with Yomiuri. He was doing commentary for Hochi, and he'd squeeze behind me, and I'd like, you know, there's about 3 inches of clearance, and I'd like be sucking.
Not when you're sitting there.
I'd be sucking in my stomach and pulling in my chair, and he'd be tapping me on the shoulders and saying, "Don't worry about it. I'll get by. I'm not very big. Don't trouble yourself." Everybody else would be like giving me, like going, "You're in my way, buddy." Not everybody.
No, yeah, I apologize. I thought you were saying, you know, he squeezed behind you, meaning in the seat behind you, but he was trying to pass along.
Walking from his seat to the exit.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. All right. And then you wanted to mention some of the players who have arrived, the early bird specials, I'm calling them, the guys who have arrived
here early to avoid. I was surprised, and I mentioned this, Stefan Romero was sorry, Stefan, but he was unable to hit where he usually hits in Portland. You know, he takes his Rapsodo and he goes to the gym in Portland, and the gym's closed.
Yeah,
the place where he goes is closed. So,
and COVID, I said, baby.
Well, you better come hit in Japan because there's going to be a lockdown. And Stephen Moya, his teammate, had just his Buffalo's teammate again,
mm-hmm.
just arrived in Japan 2 weeks ago to make sure he beat any travel restrictions. And then last week it was Dion Viciedo, because the Japanese government, I mean, these people saw it coming. The Japanese government yesterday said there will be no more special exemptions for pro soccer and baseball players who have visas.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not here, you're not in camp. So today the Yakult Swallows announced also that Albert Suarez and a reliever Scott McGuff have both arrived. So that's a big thing for them. You know, the Hanshin Tigers have like 8 players, and I think Chen Wei-in is the only one who's in Japan.
Mm.
So and these teams that have really bulked up, you know, they might not get those guys for a while.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's time for the Swallows to make their move this year.
Yeah. All right, and the Kohei Arihara, the former Fighters pitcher, did sign with the Rangers, so we did have one player make the jump over there and posting Haruki Nishikawa is going to return to the Fighters. And by the way, Masahiro Tanaka, while he hasn't said anything about signing with a Japanese team, he hasn't signed with a major league team, so he could be available. Let's just put it that way.
Well, he said a couple of weeks ago that, well, he was misquoted, I believe. Somebody misinterpreted something that a Japanese reporter wrote. He said he hadn't heard from, you know, I can't guess what was possibly said, but this report, that report, he said the chances that I return to Japan are not zero.
Okay.
And that he was now fielding offers from every team, as opposed to the report that he would only sign with the Yankees or a Japanese club. And the San Diego Padres are reportedly kicking the tires, but as I said with Sugano, and noting that Tanaka had planned to train until the season began in Florida, until he got tired of people looking at his family weird in public.
Yep.
And it made his family uncomfortable. And so he thought maybe we're better off just being in Japan, which, considering Florida is Florida, it was probably a wise decision. So I wouldn't be surprised if, given those experiences and the way COVID is, that he doesn't say, well, you know, 2021, Japan looks like a good deal.
Okay, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so this came from Eugene via Twitter way back in last year. He said, is there any concern in the Central League about its inferiority to the Pacific League? Any chatter about meaningful changes? How many times do the Giants need to be swept in the Japan series? So in passing, actually, I had glanced at a headline on one of those Sports Daily newspapers last year. Mm-hmm. But maybe it was more of a suggestion than an actual article about this. And this was that the Central League teams need to get together, have a powwow, and figure out how to attack the Pacific League and compete better, because things are clearly lopsided and, you know, it's almost non-competitive. Well, non-competitive, I joke when I say almost non-competitive, because what I did find on the internet is in the past 10 years in the Japan series since 2012, mm-hmm. the Pacific League teams are 38-17-1 in the Japan series. Mm. And in the past 3 years, 12...
Okay, go ahead.
12-1-1. So, and that's including the Giants. So, and since interleague play began, it's 1,098 wins and 966 losses for the Pacific League. So, you know, we saw with Alex Ramirez, the former Swallows and Giants slugger and Bay Stars manager, who's now a YouTube star, I should say.
A YouTuber. A YouTuber,
he talked about the fact that he's got his own opinion about why the Pacific League is better. I think, you know, I think some of that could be debunked because we saw some higher speeds in the Central League among a lot of its starting pitchers. There's probably a lot of opinions as to why the PL is better, but what are they going to do? They're going to sit around and say, why are they better? They're going to get together and say, this is what we have to do, because they're only players. And I don't think the owners can get together and say, what are we going to do? They're only the owners. I think it has to be everybody getting together and say, hey, imitation is the highest form of flattery. Let's dig into their organization. Let's create more competition. Let's focus on winning. Let's bring in high quality teachers of the game. Let's practice like they do. Let's do all these kinds of things. But these are only things that you can see when you're outside the organization. You have to get someone who's been in the organization, bring them in, you know, pilfer some of their coaches, get some of their front office people, and then start to mimic and do what they do, implement some of their philosophies, train your players better, and then draft better, and then maybe you'll be better. I don't know, but I don't think it's that easy that they can just get together and talk about it, and that's going to solve the problem.
Okay, I did a couple of posts about it, and I'm not going to repeat them here on jballallen.com. One is called The Gap, and I forget what the other one is called, but one talks about actually proving that there is a different qualitative difference, and the other one talks about analyzing where it is, goes into the draft and player talent and free agent movement and so on, import mm-hmm. players and so on. So you can read those if you're interested at jballallen.com. And yeah, obviously, this wasn't like a secret that the Pacific League would be, but sweeping the Giants twice. The Giants dominated the Central League, although having said that, they did not dominate the Central League to the degree to which the SoftBank Hawks dominated the Pacific League. And the Pacific League typically is winning 55% of its games against the Central League. So that kind of tells you where that's going. They didn't need to sweep the Giants twice in a row for everybody to realize, but actually they kind of did, because the blinders came off.
Right.
And Tatsunori Hara said, we need to do something. We need to have a DH. That's the Pacific League's secret weapon, the DH.
Right.
And the other Central League teams went, no. Not now. And I there may be a slight little bit to that, but I'm not certain. I have thought so in the past, but I'm less sold on that now. So I'm not going to say that, but I agree with John. They basically need to all say we need to do a better job. One of the problems is, and I've mentioned this before, is a shift in power, the shift in money in the Pacific League. They've always had very well financed teams, but the shift in money is dramatic with Rock 10, although Rock 10 is not big spenders on its baseball team. It could be if they wanted to. The Lions have invested huge amounts of money in their player development because I think they realized they were falling behind. And in 2018, they decided that's going to stop. So they have, I think, the biggest pro baseball training complex in Japan. It's up in Tokorozawa now. It's just huge. And the Fighters are going to, and the key, I think, is the Pacific League teams upgrading their ballparks to make money. There are the Central League teams that have ownership of their own home parks are right now the Hanshin Tigers, Hiroshima Carp, and the DeNA BayStars. And the Tigers are kind of a weird situation where it's sort of owned by a company in the same group. So even though they actually own one of their parent companies is the majority shareholder of Koshien Stadium, they're really not in charge. So they're not making a big profit out of it. That's the thing, is the Pacific League teams, and then in 2023, the Nippon Ham Fighters are going to have their own stadium, and that will be 4 team-owned stadiums and 2 leased stadiums with full operating rights where they can basically mint money.
Yeah. All right.
And so their money can go into development. And on the Pacific League side, you've got the Giants, who are well financed and they make a lot of money, but they're hampered by Tokyo Dome, by the huge amount of rent they have to pay, and the Yakult Swallows and the Chunichi Dragons, who have just basically they can't make a profit because of all the money they have to pay on rent. And that's just the way they do business, is spend money. So those two teams aren't going to be a factor. And so it's like 6 against 4.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you went into more detail. I would just advise you guys to read jballisland.com and go on there and look at what Jim has written. But like I said, I think there are going to be a lot of opinions, and a lot of it can be around money and market and all that stuff. So, but we have one more comment I want to get to, and then we've got to get out of here. Pete from the Kansai area sent us a note on the Facebook page, and he said, "I just caught the last podcast of 2020. I'm an old National League fan too, and I always think these new rule changes are going to ruin the game. Home plate collisions, no breaking up the double plays, automatic 4-pitch walks. Are these guys nuts? None of these rule changes have ruined the game, though, and I probably get over the DH too. Go Expos."
Go Expos, indeed.
So I was basically not against the collision rule. I liked the notion of not throwing a 4-pitch intentional walk. I got into a disagreement with Casey McGee when he was with the Giants about getting out of the way at second base, so I liked all those changes. But I also love the strategy of having the pitcher hit, as opposed to the luxury of not having to consider, you know, when to take the pitcher out, when to hit for him or when to not hit for him, or what goes through a manager's mind if his pitcher runs the bases in the 6th inning and makes the last out at third base after, you know, running all the way from first to third. And now he has to go straight to the mound. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into the pitcher hitting that don't have to do with the pitcher. So, I would miss that, but I did see this past season with the major leagues that even the 3-batter minimum and the universal DH didn't hinder the game so much. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe the game changes and you just have to get used to it.
I think go ahead and try stuff. The only change I'm really against is the proposal to ban the shift. You know, why don't you say we're going to ban hitters from trying to hit to the opposite field?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, it's you set up a game and you change the rules another way if that's what you want. Change the mound, do this, do that. That's fine. I will, a little bit of news, and I'm not really breaking it here because it was the story that was broken before anyone heard about it. The three batter minimum is not coming to Japan.
Thank goodness.
I spoke to a member of the rules committee, and he said basically there wasn't any desire. There were a few voices saying we should be the same on the same page as the major leagues, and a lot more voices have said, like, why bother? It doesn't have nothing to do with us. This is not
why bother. Problem. Yeah, I do not like that rule. Yeah, but
and so
it didn't get in the way.
No,
but yeah,
but we're not like going to have that. We're going to have. But he also said we are still going to be stuck with umpires reviewing videos on little teensy weensy monitors that they can barely see on because the owners don't want to pay. And the news that NPB was installing TrackMan in all of the main stadiums from 2019 turned out to be just a sort of one of those wishful thinking things, because apparently Mazda Stadium, where the owners are really interested in making profits and not really interested in other things, said, no, that's going to cost us money.
No, thanks.
No, thanks. We're good.
Well, yeah, so much for that. All right, well, we've kept you guys a long time. We appreciate you listening after a little bit of a respite. I'm not sure when we'll be back next time, either 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, but we already have the interview done, so look for that. We will talk to you next time. Send us an email at yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there, or hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions, comments, or just let us know how you're doing. Have a good, warm winter, because camp's going to open in 2 weeks. Less than 2 weeks.
Indeed. Winter wonderland.
Yeah, I would like wonder what you're doing here. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your off season.
Okay, see you at jballallen.com and live chat coming up on Monday for all you subscribers.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at jballallen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.